My brother, Malik Youssef, how you doing today, my brother?
Peace to the God. Exhausted. You know, ain't been asleep yet, but I'm good.
My goodness, you ain't been asleep yet.
Well, I had a studio. I got my bad kids class, writing camp launching tomorrow. So
Okay. That's what's up. Congratulations on that. We definitely gonna talk a little bit more about that in a second. You just got back from Africa, right?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Well, I just want to give a quick introduction here. We got the wordsmith, Mr. Malik Youssef, is a six-time Grammy winner. That's what it is. Grew up admiring your work.
Grew up on your sound, man.
Yeah, even before we knew who you was. That's my sound. That's my sound guy. Deb, that's my son there. And he grew up on your work because I could really only bump that type of music at that time. You know what I'm saying? So
I'm grateful.
Coming up. so he's well ingratiated into your sound. A man from the city of Chi, grew up in the Wild Hunnets, from Chicago Vocational. Is that right?
Yeah, man.
To Chicago Vocational High School. Is that the same place that my man Juwan Howard went to?
Yeah, it's my brother.
Sir.
Yeah,
we were there at the same damn time. That's what's up. So, I came across Malik back in the day. Doing my work with my brother, Lee, and, he's always been a cool brother. And so, I'm so blessed to have him on here. I just want to introduce you really quick, to Chancey Herer. I don't know if you're familiar with Jack Herer, if you've ever heard of that strain or his activism. That's his daughter.
Yes, sir.
She's with us, and like I said, this is Dev and Asia.
That's crazy.
Asia's off camera there somewhere.
Yeah, she's rolling up right now. That's what's happening.
Definitely. That's Jack Harris's daughter right there, brother.
hey, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great.
Pleasure to meet you. Wow.
Likewise.
You already know. I know you hear it all the time. Your father's a super legend, and man, just a real thing. Sometimes you see, like, man, Jack is the type of guy where, you know, it's like, I don't know if somebody writes his speeches for him or is he just going to outer space and grab him. It's just the things that he stands for. It's just, and how he articulates them is so insane. Yeah. Wow. You grew up with that every day.
Yeah. He's in the crib. And yes, it comes from him.
I feared that. I feared that.
All was in a lot of acid, but really him.
Yes, sir. Man. So you welcome to the Silver Ash Podcast. So, you know, I'm gonna go ahead and let Chancey start off with the rapid fire, since you guys have just introduced yourselves.
Yes. Indeed.
Well, you're familiar with my father, so I guess you're a smoker.
Yes, of course.
Are you a wake and baker, or?
It depends. When I was younger, it definitely was like, get up and get it lit. Now it's just like, I know it sounds crazy. I know it doesn't make medical sense, but I feel like I have so much cannabis in my body that I can just think it and it activates.
You're not the first person I've heard say that before.
And you wouldn't actually believe that that might make medical sense.
Man. I feel like the cannabinoids in my body have been fed so much that I can just be like, go. And they just turn around and go, vroom. It's crazy. Right.
So no wake and bake. You sativa or indica?
Depends, you know. Sometimes, you know, when it's time to get intimate, you know, or it's time to get business creative. It's two different types of creativity, right. You know. Well, several different types of creativity.
No doubt.
You know.
What do you like for creativity?
Okay, like, so I paint.
And another artist.
Yeah, I paint. I do poetry. I do music. I make beats. So it depends. I mean, sometimes that indica will make you make, you know, the beat that you really trying, that you're feeling at the time, and sometimes it'll interrupt that feeling. It'll try to deliver you a different feeling. It's such a mixed bag. It's such a gumbo, you know.
Exactly, yeah. How I describe it. It's always, yeah, the mood you're in kind of influences whatever you're doing. Mm-hmm.
Yes, man. Yeah.
Do you, when you consume it, do you mostly smoke or do you eat?
I used to be mainly a smoker. Then I got turned on to the edible game and the drinkables game. And it's like, I understand that the edibles and the drinkables do something different because they process through your liver. They process through your liver, so it's a more psychedelic effect, you know.
Yes, yes.
And the ponderances that come from that. Again, it's just a mixed bag. It's just like, you know, in the creative process with me making beats, I might make a beat that sounds like something that Ravi Shankar would have made if he was making a beat. Then I also might do a joint that, you know, that Young Thug be like, this is the one. I think I love this. You know, so.
Yeah, that's what's up. So you into that. How about the concentrates? You ever try the concentrates? The dab?
You smoke crack, don't you?
I dab. My man get, my man Mike Dean gave me some dab in 2004. And I was like, okay, this is too potent.
Especially back then. Crack, don't you?
Man.
Ooh, yeah, I totally get that.
I dabbed some shit. I was like, okay, I can't leave Mike's house. I got to stay here.
Dab will do you. That's for damn sure.
a little dab will do you, my nigga. You heard me?
I've seen people pass out off the dabs, like standing straight up, just take a dab and just on the wall.
Oh, yeah, one of my homies.
But they were asleep for like points.
Yeah, one of my homies, Fireman, he went hard. He went hard on the dinab, you know what I'm saying, and did it to himself.
Went a little hard, huh?
Hey, so speaking of this, you know, let's talk about your first time, bro. Let's talk about your first time. Everybody comes on the show, they kind of tell us about their first time. It might be your first two times because a lot of people didn't get high the first time. But go ahead. I'll let you tell the story.
I think I was 12. Well, that was like 11 or 12. It was the summer that I turned. I turned 12 that spring. So it was like I think it was right before my birthday or right after. I can't remember. Me and my brother went down to the house at the corner and they were smoking. Mm-hmm. And they're like, man, you ain't never smoked before, Lee? I'm like, nah, my daddy smoked, but I'd be hanging around him, you know, him and his friend. I'd try to sneak up and get a contact or something. But I ain't never.
Right.
You dig. So when I had a chance to, you dig, I was like, okay, this is different, especially for a nigga like me. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, it was a great entree into who I really was, because, you know, I was a kid with learning challenges and shit like that. I stuttered and all kind of things like that. So it was like, you know, it was really cathartic for me. The experience was cathartic, you know, and obviously the product was medicinal. So it became part of my life.
Yeah.
You know, I've taken moments in my life where I've just been like, no, I'm not fucking with it for reasons because I feel like a creative rush is coming and I don't want to add to it. I want to kind of control,
right?
You know, and it's not just a tolerance break. It's sometimes I'm just like, let me abstain, you know, like you fast from anything, right? You know, and I abstain for a while, but what gets me is the smell. I ain't never been a coffee drinker. I ain't been a coffee drinker, but I know coffee drinkers be like, I can't smell, I can't take, I'm gonna go back to drinking. Right. I'd be like, nah, don't even smoke around me from now on, because I'm gonna smoke out everything.
I'm the same way with that, bro. I start with the smell. That's kind of why I love Jack Herer, because I love the aromatherapy of that Jack Herer. That's what's up, man. So you got high the first time, huh? You actually got high.
Oh yeah, yeah.
was it a blunt?
Yeah, yeah. No. This was tops.
Joints.
That's paper.
Mm-hmm. Paper crown, man. You gotta be skilled to roll them.
Learned on.
I can't believe I should be smoking right now.
Hey, man, we about to do it. You know what I'm saying? Actually, everybody is about to do it. So, you know, that's kind of what we do on the show. We do light up. So I don't know where you at, if you can do it where you at, but
I'm at my career. I'm doing right
hey, my there nigga. We go.
My nigga. So, hey, so I want to ask you, you know, about growing up in the Shy. How was it growing up in the Wild Hundreds?
It was wild as fuck, Joe.
Wow.
It's the Hundreds, G. I mean, you know, the gardens and, you know, 103rd and 12-8 where I'm from and 115, 119, you know what I'm saying? My 103rd Street, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
113th over by Finger High School. For real. You know what I'm saying?
It's
like,
for real, for real.
Yeah.
It's for real. For
yeah,
real.
It was not.
That's that. So then you growing up in the Shy, and you know, when is it the time that you realized that you had dyslexia?
I didn't realize what was going on. I just knew that I wasn't as dumb as the teachers was making me out to be. You know, well, it really wasn't the teachers. It was the grade. Yeah. My grades was like, I was like, no, this is not really me. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm bigger than this thing. That's how I was feeling. You know what I'm saying?
And that's now. Did they ever try to put you on the special ed track?
Oh yeah, hell yeah. Of course they tried to put me in the slow kids class. I'm like, nah, I ain't going. My grandma came up there and told the motherfuckers like, nah, that ain't going.
Right. So right around that time, I'm sure you know when you're in Chicago, the gang life is for real. So, you know, right around that time, I'm assuming that's when you you became a part of the Blackstone.
12 years old, yeah.
Yeah, so it's kind of explain to people, if you don't mind. You know, it's a little different in Chicago. It's a little different than people. Yeah, we know, but explain to people how that life is when you're growing up in the Shy.
What it was for me was we lived in the Hundreds, and we was in a GD neighborhood, you know. We was in a heavy GD neighborhood. And it was like, you know, you got to fit in. So the older homies, Vamp and Vino and them, they had plugged with Kino and all the GDs from down 123rd Street who was pushing on our deck. And also it was, you know, 126th Street was all the GDs and so on and so forth. But they started like taking advantage of us because we was like, you know, the end of the city. We was like down at the end of the city type shit. And they was like pushing on us and kind of like using our neighborhood for a come up, you know, hitting garages, hitting cars, all that shit. The robbery shit. And the older brothers won gin. They was like, no, sir, y'all ain't finna really do all that. Walk down four blocks and then make our whole neighborhood a motherfucking, you know, a shopping mall. We're gonna go. So I remember they told us, you know what? We not gonna be disciples no more. We gonna be ace racketeers. And I didn't know what that was or nothing. But I'd heard the Stones when I was little because I lived on Stony Island by Hyde Park High School. So my auntie's boyfriend, Ed, had got murdered by the Stones for being a neutron and being in their territory. So it was like a gang.
Neutron is neutral for people who don't know.
Oh, I'm sorry. Neutron is somebody that's
thank you, dude.
That's not directly affiliated. Yeah. There might be, but neutron can be a beneficiary, you know what I'm saying? And you could be part and partial to the demonstration if you depending on what neighborhood you're in. Because in Chicago, they ask you where you're from. Even if you say, I don't bang.
Nigga, where you from?
Yeah. Right.
You know what that's what you fuck with.
That's like you say, you from Holy City, nigga. You a lord. We ain't even honor nothing.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
So that's what it is. Mm-hmm. It's more of a, you know, you grew up in that neighborhood and a lot of people don't understand it. A lot of times those things started because you know, you kind of holding down your block, not in a way where you trying to be violent, but you trying to keep bullshit out your neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. 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 And that was the key. It's all groups coalesce for the reasons of security, for the reasons of community, for the reasons of resource acquisition, mm-hmm. Guardianship, you know, so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. So all these things come into play. And when you in urban sectors that are bereft of resources, the activity becomes increasingly underground, increasingly unguided, increasingly unchaperoned. And you get a group of kids, you know, I mean, the most, and I'll say this, the most obnoxious and ostentatious humans in the world are adolescent males in any species.
And that's funny. I see Chancey smiling because Chancey can probably speak to that because
I teach high school, but alternative high school, so high be school. It. All the kids who ooh, don't dope. Get to be in.
I love yeah. yes me. You get a bunch of me. Ooh, Lord.
Yeah. So
and you love it.
What school? What's the name of school?
Babe? My school is called Wellsprings. Wellsprings Friends School. It used to be. I guess it was started by Quakers, but I live in Eugene, Oregon.
Well, so. I've been to Eugene, Oregon a bunch of times.
Yeah, they got nice.
Yeah, I really
Eugene. Nice weed culture up there. Come on, man. Yeah.
Look, let me tell you something. When it wasn't legal,
there was a pill. Man, you could get it there. You could get it there, and you could get what? It. You could get it for the low.
And you get for the low, and you come on. And the police kind of let you slide a little bit in the club, you know what I'm saying?
That sounds dope.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, wink, you didn't know that.
Mm-hmm, yeah, she's like, oh, I had no idea that you could drive and smoke and have weed in the car without getting pulled over and killed.
Man, hey, bro, the stories that she has about her dad, Jack, and driving around smoking, bro, it's
well, he always drove around smoking. He never didn't smoke in the car, so.
Well, yeah, well, that would I would be surprised to hear anything else.
So
anything else, I would be disappointed.
Right?
No,
disappointed. So I got a question, bro. When did you start getting your hustle on?
15. Well, 14, really. Some of the vice lords at the school, they seen I was like, you know, enough for myself a little bit or whatever at CVS, and they said, hey, you can sell these joints, you know. 25 cents a piece. Okay. Wow. For these joints, and they would have it, like some of the girls rolling.
Oh shit!
And I keep a nickel, so my goal was to try to sell 100 joints, and I had, you know, the freshman kind of it's like a self fulfilling prophecy, right? You know, because I sell weed, I look like the cool kid they want to be around, and because I look like the cool kid they want to be around, they want to buy weed. You know what I'm saying? So.
It all works.
It became yeah. It became kind of like a spiral. So, and then they was like, man, Shorty, you out here, you know, we got to bring extra joints for you. You know what I'm saying? And it was just like
real traffic.
It was exciting to me because I was just getting I think I was my daddy was giving me $3 a day to go to school. You know, and you know you can't in the 90s. What you gonna do with that? Nothing. Bus fare is $2 back and forth. We bought a student bus card. So I got $1 left. You know what I'm saying? School lunch is what, 50 cents, something like that. You know? The school lunch if you ain't on a free lunch program. So you know what I'm saying? God damn it. I need that bread. But I mean, I was making a little extra cash. My dad was a construction worker, so we'd do odd jobs and shit like that. But you know, I had to buy clothes with that. It was not, you know, my dad wanted us to be like self-sufficient. He didn't understand how rich white folks treat their kids. He didn't understand that they give them head starts. Man. He thought, you know, get it from the ground up. You know, bruh, what I'm saying? He didn't understand this thing. One of my white homies called rich school.
Bruh.
Money school. Yeah.
Bruh, if
my dad didn't understand
that. Bruh, if I could speak on that, because like, you know, I live up here in the northern suburbs. I'm in Evanston. And, mm-hmm. and you know, I teach golf and sometimes coach basketball. And one of the things that I marvel at is I watch these kids and I say, what it must be like to live in a world as a kid where you really don't have to worry about shit. Where you just kind of, if you want it, you got it. If you want to do it, you go do it. You've seen a whole lot of shit. Like, there ain't no talk about bills or there is, unless somebody up and dies, like, it's really nothing going on of stress in your life. Like, and I can see their brains developing in a different way.
Of course they do. How would you not? When you are relieved of the tribals of insecurity as far as food or shelter insecurity. You know, I live on a golf course now, so my kids are the same way.
Yeah.
I live on a golf course right this moment. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So you say you teach golf. I mean, my son's like, I want to play golf, Dad. I'm like, cool, we can move up. He's like, golf course, I got you. I don't really like golf like that. I want to just kind of hang out. I'm like, cool. He's 9 years old. He wake up, you know. And of course I feed them information, but mainly information about selfhood. Right. You know, my 6-year-old, she's five. I take my 5-year-old, she's taking Spanish. My 11-year-old is taking French all online, you know, just what they do, what they want to do.
Yeah.
They unschool. They ain't never, you know, my baby, she ain't never been to school. You know, Cairo ain't never been to school. The other ones, they have been to school. I took them out of school.
Right.
You know, I had them in the school that was very expensive. I was like, you know, fuck this school. They the only black kids there. They get not getting proper self-imaging going on. And, you know, you got to see things. That's why you got eyes. People are like, what you see don't matter. You crazy as hell. What are you talking about? Get your goof ass out of here, lying ass, fake ass motherfucker.
Hey, Chancey, you want to kind of speak on that with the kids that you work with? I don't mean to keep you out of this because this is your wheelhouse.
Yeah, you know, our population's really mixed. I would say we usually have like a handful of kids who come from families that actually support them. And then we have a lot of kids who, you know, are just in the trenches with their family and have never, you know, they don't have that ability to see a vision for life any different than what they've been exposed to. And so it's actually a big aspect of our school is community. Every Friday when we're actually in school, we kind of have a fun class and then we do field trips or bring people in. But like the goal is just to get out and see as much and expose them to as much as they wouldn't expose themselves to as possible in every realm. So, you know, whether it's playing laser tag or going to museums or going to the coast or just like whatever in between, like plays, symphonies, like just anything we can expose them to in hopes that it's really cool. Yeah, we have so many cool artists that have come through our school. I've been teaching for 15 years, so it's really cool to see.
You were teaching since you were 5 years old.
Yeah, isn't that crazy? I was a really smart kid. I hate to brag.
A motherfucking prodigy. Man.
Off that good weed, man. Off that good weed.
That's what it is.
But it does seem that I'm an artist and I love nurturing artists, but it seems like that's where artists come from, are hard places. So as much as it sucks and you want to uplift every, like, God, there's so much beauty that can be communicated from people who
and you have so you have several sculptures. You have several sculptures around. Those are bombs.
Same difference. Yeah, it's
same difference. Same difference. It's art.
Bombs and jars of weed, bro. She be flexing. Be flexing with that.
What is that? The art? Is that your art that's on your wall?
Actually, on my wall here, most of it is either my sister's. There's one in the corner that's mine. My sister's my friend. Someone made one of my father. But that one there, my sister did in high school, and she hates it. So I keep it.
Is that the one that's made out of joint paper?
The one in the corner up there is. Yeah, it's a collage of my father's face made completely just out of...
Dude, you got to see.
Want me to pull it down?
Yeah, I'll pull it down. Can you pull that down?
You got to show that. You got to show that to him. It's incredible, bro. It's incredible. And so we talk about this thing with the kids, bro, because, you know, look at this. I'm going to let her show this first. That's from joint papers, bro.
That's crazy.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
Let me see. I can't see it.
He didn't see it. Oh, shit.
I ain't see it.
Chancey, can you hear us?
Oh, she can't hear us.
He didn't see it.
I didn't see it. You got to talk to activate your screen.
Yeah, Chancey.
I have to put my headphones on to hear.
Oh. Yeah, he didn't see it.
Yeah, Malik, can you show it again?
Oh, okay.
Can you bring it back? Yeah, you gotta bring it back.
You gotta talk to activate the screen.
Yeah, so he can see the big screen.
I see.
Yeah, man, but I try to do something different with my kids, bro. Like my kids all learn Japanese, and a couple of them, my son here on screen, spent a little time studying in Japan.
Wow, amazing.
Oh, there it is. Look at that. Say something, Chancey.
Can you hear me? You guys are over.
Yeah, there we go. Wow. Who made that?
There you go.
Who made that?
Oh, what is the artist's name?
Jesus Christ.
His last name is Maynard.
That is stupid.
And he has a webpage. I'll have to send Todd a link to his webpage because he did a bunch of notorious donors all out of
Wow. Out of weed paper.
That's cold.
Out of smoke joints. Oh, wow. That shit is incredible. So we all parents up in here. So, Malik, sorry, bro. And you can take your time with that shit.
please take your time.
But I think that growing up, that my experiences growing up kind of shaped the parent that I am today. I would say Chancey might second that in her life. And so with you, Malik, how much different? I don't even want to say how much different, but how has that affected how you parent your upbringing?
Man, I'm totally different than how my parents raised me. Man, I'm 100%. I'm a very informed parent. Mm-hmm. I seek information. Mm-hmm. I do it against best practices. I check against precedents set in parenting most successful way. I get the books. I follow the blogs. I follow the bloggers. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not into the whole this is how I was raised and I turned out fine, because I ain't turn out
right.
Fine. I turned out shooting people, selling dope, fucking I don't know how many bitches, you know, around the world, you know, just on the strength. And it wasn't like it was malicious. It was like, oh, we like each other. Let me give you my most valuable thing that I feel about myself, which is this sexual prowess, and never built real relationships, right. You know? And so, you know, and people say, you know, and the thing is, if I worked at UPS, they'd be saying, man, that dude can't keep his dick in his pants. But because I'm an artist, it's like, oh, he hit every bad bitch in Hollywood. Yeah, not knowing that that's a sickness, you know, not knowing that that's sex addiction, not knowing that that's me, that's lack of self-esteem, you know, that's lack of self-value, self-worth, right. You know?
Right.
And, you know, not understanding that, and it looks like this what you're supposed to do when you're a real live street nigga, and then you come into the industry from there. That's what you're supposed
right.
to do. You know, and I see now that was, if I could have had back them hours, man, I'd be a billionaire.
Right. You know, real talk.
If I could have back them hours, and it's not that I'm saying that nobody I was with was worth it. You know what I'm saying? They were worth my time, mm-hmm. but not so much of it, giving away yep. so much, so yep. loosely spread, yep. you know, and so the legend of Malik, you know, she was in the movie and all that shit. I look back and I cringe almost because it was stupidity. Mm-hmm. It was stupidity.
Not time.
You know, and I'm still cool. Thank God I'm still cool with some of those women. You know what I'm saying? And they've gone on to bigger stardom even at points. But it's just that, you know, I raised with the lack of love, you know, that I wasn't in my mother intently told me she ain't love me, made sure that I felt, you know, underappreciated.
Right.
You know, she intentionally made sure that I couldn't properly develop love for myself, you know, well, it wasn't be easy for me to develop love for myself. Mm-hmm. And so I saw it in every woman that I came in contact with, you know, and whatever it took, you know, for me to gain their favor, you know, and a lot of times, you know, I mean, let's keep it real, especially in the world where you are a person of color, and especially black, and you are a man, you know, a lot of that comes through you know, money, sex. Mm-hmm. That's what it is. You know what I'm saying? Can you perform adequately? It's just part of human nature. And can you spend this bag, nigga?
Real talk. Real talk.
So, you know, so that was what I lived through that. And I'm teaching my sons right now that they are loved and they valued past what's ever in their pocket or in their pants. And it's so important to say these things, man. Yeah. I got artists that I work with now, young artists in their 20s. And before I work with them, I make them get therapy. This is the truth. I'm not exaggerating in any way. I make them get therapy. But when I come to their crib, I first come to their crib, like, I'm slide by. Like, hey, OG, I want you to work on my album. I slide. I'm like, okay, that's a habit. That's a habit. That's an addiction. Mm-hmm. You know, that's deleterious behavior. Mm-hmm. And I say, man, bro, you can't have, you know, 20 niggas around you and you don't have, none of them have a function in your crew. And they bring in 70 chicks from where all over LA or California or Miami or where we are. And then you spend, you know, $10,000 on food and liquor every night. Mm-hmm. Type shit. That's not sustainable. Mm. So I got one of my little homies, I put in sex and it's because when I went there it was Sex Addict Anonymous. Now it's called Sex and Love Addict Anonymous, which is a way sweeter connotation, way more beautiful connotation, because it is the love that you're looking for. So it's just, and as Black men, this conversation is hard to have.
I'm glad we're having it.
Yeah, drinking a lot, being able to beat niggas up after the club, and fucking a bad bitch is a badge of honor. And it's really just it's really just a progenitor for the mental illnesses that we go through when those monies don't come in like that no more. When the hit record is a year ago, you know, and then the depression comes in, and I'm not trying to feel sorry for grown people, but I'm saying these people aren't grown. They haven't grown. Yeah. They've entered the concept of adulthood, you know, but they haven't had the maturation process.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, that's wisdom. Because I see that. I love to watch the music documentaries and study the old people. And you see the people that get themselves caught in that box and that time warp. And they be doing the same shit for 20 years. And it's not serving them well. Just stuck in a time warp. So if I could move on to something even a little bit more enlightening, a little bit more.
Yeah.
Hey, but that was real though, man. That was real. I appreciate that, man. Yes, I appreciate it.
Yes. Yes.
So needed.
Yes, yeah, so needed. And that's why I wanted to have Brother Malik on here, because I know he's speaking like that. You've worked with artists. You work with a lot of artists, and so I know that there's a lot of times there's a process involved. Everybody is different. So you work with some big ones. So what's it like? What's your process like when you're creating?
It's just like with anything else. I make myself the process. How I prep is the real process. Mm-hmm. And so when I come into it, you hear this saying. You've heard this a lot in the surfer world. You got to have loose knees, because you know, when surfing was first documented in Papua New Guinea, when the people of Papua New Guinea, they first started using these boards, you know, they kind of used them for transport, coastal transport, you know, and then it became a sport. So these surfboards, you know, it was first just like, you know, you just kind of like swimming out, you know, like it's a small little personally contained little, basically like a you know, just a bodyboard, really. And then they start to manipulate them as you know, as people do, especially, you know, from our descent, from our bloodline, our lineage. And they just start made it a cool thing. But you know, the thing that separates the human from the ocean, we're not designed to be in the ocean for prolonged periods of time. But we are designed to utilize any surface, right? So for transportation, so it's a thoroughfare. So when you on a surfboard, the waves are going to do what they do. Nothing you can do to control the waves. Nothing you can do. But you can't control that surfboard. Yeah. That board you can control, so you can catch any wave. So that's how I go into the studio. I make sure I'm prepared. I'm sure. Make sure I've listened to what they've done. Okay. I've listened to the consistent theme or narrative through all their music, and then I say, hey, you know, what you trying to do? You know, I ask them questions before I get there. What you trying to achieve this album? I just want to make a hit. Or some people say, hey, you know, I want to talk about female empowerment. I don't want to be a damsel in distress. You know, I want to be a strong woman. Or, hey, I've grown up a lot since then. I want to be more in touch with my female sexuality, you know, those different concepts. Right. So I just do all the research on that and some idioms and some slogans. And I look at people, you know, I look at, you know, the women's suffrage movement. I look at figureheads. I look at some of their quotes, and then I start to distill. So it's me is the process. Mm. And, you know, some artists, you know, Jill Scott might want to start off with a beat, right. You know, but Snow might want to start off with a melody that she's singing, right. You know, Beyonce might start off with words. You know,
I would be remiss, I know relationships come and go, but I got Dev on here, and he's such a Kanye fan. So I gotta ask you, how is that when you in the process with Ye? Is there, because you guys been vibing for forever? So
yeah, I mean it's hell.
It is
hellacious. You know, he is a terrible person to work with. He is difficult to work with, difficult to be around, and for me, any environment, but especially a work environment. But you know, that friction and that fire for just, you know, some sharp swords. You know what I'm saying? So my gift is become stronger because I had to work. You know, the arduity of working with a nigga like him that
forged by fire.
Yeah, it's forged by fire. A nigga like him that's a different person every 30 minutes, not even every day. Different. You might start off the session with one Kanye West, and by the time you the first beat is being, you know, fucking uploaded, you got a different Kanye.
Wow.
You know, so. You know, it's not different than like when he was at the presidential debate, I guess, and he was crying. I mean, that's not that everybody that's around is like, yeah, okay.
That's
like
normal.
He's crying at the presidential debate. We like, yeah, oh yeah, yeah, of course. You know, that happened in the studio. He'll quit music right there in the session. He'll quit music. I'm through with music. I'm done.
Shit. Really emotional. So how does smoking, you know, mix into the creative process when you're working with somebody like him? Do you step out, or is it
I don't think I've ever smoked with Kanye before. I don't think I've ever smoked with him before. I can't remember smoking with Kanye. Maybe wow. I think if I look back, I might have seen him puff past once or twice.
Wow.
So, but again, too, I wanna put this disclaimer. Yep. You know, as much as I've done with Kanye, as much stuff we get done, it's because I get shit done fast. That's my nature.
I kind of got that vibe. Yeah.
I probably work with Kanye. I probably see Kanye. And this is honest. This is my documentary too. I say that I probably see Kanye 20 days a year, and probably I talk to him another 10 times on the phone, and then email another 5 times. So maybe 40 days a year out of 365 days, I interact with Kanye West.
And that's perspective.
He's not, I'm just putting in perspective. He's not the type of nigga I fuck with. You know what I'm saying? I'm not the type of nigga he fuck with. You know what I'm saying? We don't have that. There's no real camaraderie. There's a brotherhood there because of Donda West. Mm. And she said, take care of my boy. And, you know, this, I'm also a nigga from Chicago that also have been known to take care of people.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's our situation. Okay. You know, that's our situation. So usually he tries to do every album without me. And then, I mean, for comfort's sake, you know, because I'm, you know, I'm pressure, nigga. I'm pressure for sure. I'm pressure. So When I show up at the last minute after he's done all this other shit, I'm like, nope, this, that. Nobody can tell Kanye what to do, but I kind of got him and say, bro, try this. And you know, only probably 70% of my shit land with him anyway, even after, you know, I'll be like, yo, why you change this, G? Because I wanted to in my album to leak.
I'll be hearing the verses that leak and then the way the songs turn out. So I can see that for sure.
Yeah, you know, there's no rhyme or reason to it. And then after we make the album, he's like, you was right, God, man. I'm in Paris, nigga, they loving it. I'm like,
So I got
album number 5, the same thing happened. I love you, man. You gotta come on tour with me, man. I go on tour. Yeah, I go on tour with the nigga. You know, it's a 30-day tour. I start off, I pay for my own tour. You know, I'm asking for nothing. Kanye never gave me a penny in his life, not one cent. Not one penny has Kanye ever given me. Not one. Not ever in our whole life. So I pay for my tour. I come on tour with him. And I last about 6 days. And I'm loose. Can't do it, G. Stone. I can't do it, Joe.
You're stone for real. Hey, so on the other end of the spectrum, and I just got to ask this, like, so you work with somebody like Beyonce, like, I know that's totally different.
Heaven. Okay, so we got Heaven.
Beyonce, Jay-Z.
Same conversation.
Uh-huh. But I think I wouldn't have appreciated working with Hov and Beyonce and being in the studio with them if I didn't have a Kanye, because I would have been thinking that this is what the studio is.
There it is.
And I wouldn't have been prepared to go out. And, I mean, there's nobody as terrible as Kanye, obviously. You know what I'm saying? But I wouldn't have been prepared to deal with. I was like, if it ain't this, it ain't nothing. You know? So sometimes, and think about this, man. Sometimes the things you need are in hell. You know? Sometimes to you know, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they had to go through the furnace.
Yeah.
You know?
Real.
To come out and know the conversation, so I could speak the conversation of the furnace. I could speak the conversation of the motherfucking lake of fire, right. You know, Lac de Flambeau. I could speak the language of that from dealing with this nigga. You know what I'm saying? And, I mean, I'm not. It's everybody's gonna tell you the same thing. Like, it's horrible. It's like being. And it was easier for me because I could cuss the nigga out, tell him I'll fuck him up. Other niggas in there, they got like this. Fuck are you, man?
So you have like sort of a closer to Chicago, like a family kind of connection with him.
Yeah. So I'm, and plus I'm just like, nah, nigga, you ain't finna talk to me like that, Joe.
Nigga, you know where I'm from.
No, you know what this is. You know what's gonna happen. You know, that's. Do we call an ambulance now or see how severe it is and then call it? Because that's what we got a couple choices.
All right.
One time we was in Paris, nigga. This nigga going crazy. And he say, I come in. I'm like, dude, what's going on in here? He's like, I'm telling these motherfuckers they got. I'm like, bro, it's fucking 9 o'clock in the morning, man. Look, man, we gonna have breakfast. We gonna feed everybody, nigga. Then we gonna talk. And we sit down. He's like, man, Malik, I never talked to you like I talked to them. I said, but you shouldn't talk to them like that either. Dude, there's no fucking reason. There's no reason to berate people, to take people's self-esteem. It means nothing to you, but it means everything to them. Don't take it. Don't take it from them, bro.
Right.
But he enjoys having people on pins and needles because that's who he is. And it makes him feel more comfortable in a space where everybody else is uncomfortable. Right. So that, you know, that's one of the things, but, you know, but still we have to steal some of the best music, and I've had to fight to get that music. I had to fight to get good, to have Gold Digger be the single. I had to fight to have Good Life be the single. I mean, literally, nigga.
That's crazy. Thanks for fighting, bro.
This nigga telling
side note, man, your input on Sin City was ridiculous.
Oh, no, thank you, G.
For real, you had your moment where you shine. I love that part.
I did the whole thing. What it was the conversation was, hey Malik, we doing Cruise Summer. I'm gonna give you your whole own song on Cruise Summer. I say, okay, cool. Now, here's the crazy part. I met a kid named Jock on MySpace in 2007. So I meet this kid named Jock on MySpace, and he's a fan of ours. Just a real good kid. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So Kanye has Noah send me this beat. I'm like, okay, this shit dope. So I write a whole motherfucking verse to the shit because it's probably my whole song. And he said, okay, cool, come to New York and let's fuck with it. So we go to Jungle City to Swiss Beat shit. Because I'm getting out the cab because the cab don't want to drive me around the block. And I'm like, cool. He's like, that's absurd because it's going to take me to go all the way around and come up. Then I can't go back this way. I'm like, it's all good, G. I'll make it easy for you. No problem. Even though this your job, cool. So I give him a spare. I get out. And at the same time, a cop pulls up behind me with a bunch of little niggas in it. And they get out. I'm not paying no attention. I'm walking. They start walking faster and faster, catching up to me. I'm like, man, I know this. Okay, I'm going to have to. They trying to jack it. These niggas is in tight pants and backpacks. What the fuck is they doing? And I think the car had Atlanta license plates on it and shit. So I'm like, these niggas done drove. And they ain't trying to victimize motherfuckers. But anyway, so I'm moving to the studio. Then the dude catch up behind me. He said, what's up, man? Malik Youssef, right? This is 2012. I said, yes, sir. He said, man, you don't remember me? It's me from MySpace, Jock. I was like, oh, what's up? He said, I go by Travis Scott now. I said, man, what's up, my nigga? Yeah. But I'd always been nice to him, you know what I'm saying? Just talking to him and shit, back and forth with the little nigga. And he's like, that's my beat that I gave you, the Sin City. That's my beat. I said, what? Oh, it's crazy, nigga. Oh,
wow.
So we get there. And then we go to, then Saha comes. And we at that one studio, then Kanye said, come down to the studio. He had a whole different studio. So me and Saha go down there. We in the lobby waiting for, I think, I don't know. I want to say Maxwell or somebody to leave or some crazy shit. And I say, man, Saha, you should get on this beat that I got from Travis Scott. And I would love to. So we write Saha's verse in the lobby. By the time we go in the studio, Ye got a problem. So I'm solving an issue for him with Khaled. So I'm like, he's playing to me. I'm like, okay, cool, I got it. So I call Khaled and get on him. I get on top of Hit-Boy, blah, 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 blah. So anyway, I said, man, you know, I know you said it's my song, Ye. So I'm gonna put Saha on here with me. We had Saha verse. He's like, that's, I like it, cool. So we working in New York and this, interruption after interruption, Justin Bieber slide. It's all kind of shit. I was like, listen, man, listen to the album. It's a whole bunch of 2 Chainz verses on every song. I said, bro, you know we can't do this album here. New York is coming through. Even for me, New York is coming through the motherfucking wall.
Yeah, New York is winning.
I said, well, man, what are we going to do? I got to be here. My man, you know, Kim and I said, look, bro, we can't be pleasing Kim or nobody else, nigga. This shit. We got a budget from Def Jam, nigga. Let's make the album. And what do you think we should go? I said, nigga, of course to Hawaii.
Yeah.
But we always win at it.
Wow.
He said, all right, you ready to go right now? I'm like, no, I'm not ready to go right now. He's like, what are you doing? I'm like, no, all that stuff got shit cool out. I'm gonna go home, reset my luggage, so I won't have to be buying clothes in Hawaii. And we're gonna be ready to go. He said, okay, all right, cool. So I tell everybody, I'm like, man, we going. They like, thank you, Malik. You know, as always, thanks, man. Because I be having to, you know, reckon with Kanye's logic
right.
over his emotions, which he likes to live in his emotions. And not many of us don't like living our emotions. It's just not successful right. for us. Somehow it's been successful for him to live inside of his emotions until now, obviously, the recent Kanye. Right. But to build his career, it was successful with him living his emotions. But he also had these buffers. He had rock. He had the rock, right. nigga. He had Jay-Z, he had, you know, John Monopoly, Don C, Virgil Abloh, you know, fucking,
yeah,
all
yeah.
of us around him, Rhyme Fest, the Common, John Legend, you know, I mean, it was Mike Dean, Plain Pat, Cuddy, how could you right. fail? I could take a motherfucker off the street and put him in that environment and he'll win.
I say right. that sometimes.
No, I say that.
He's heard me
I
say that.
I could take a motherfucker off the street. I could take a motherfucker off the street and put him in an environment where you got G and hip hop and Al Branch. And I mean, God, what the fuck,
yeah.
man?
Yeah.
Oh, Ivan Jasper, you know, fucking Terry Laurent. I mean, you got all the designers, you got all the motherfucking producers, you got all the writers, you got all the singers. How the fuck you gonna lose? It's not even possible. Right. So his emotions was able to guide him, but then as he started to lose the team, it became a deleterious thing for him having those emotions. So I was always able to override the emotions, appeal to the logic, get past all that fluffy energy and get to the bare bones of shit. Right. So, you know, and that's we got to Hawaii, and now we could stretch our wings, we could breathe. We ain't got to have, you know, a meeting every hour with a celebrity coming down to talk to Kanye because he's, you know, a celebrity and he's, you know, Kim Kardashian's boyfriend or whatever. So
I get it.
Travis comes out, right? And I'm like, bet. So now as we listen to the song, we like, man, let's Tiana. I'm like, Tiana's not out here, but let's put Tiana on the album. Okay. So, you know, these are my people. I'm always suggesting ways to expand, you know.
Collaborate, so, coordinate.
Then we say, let's put, and then so we in the studio, and I'm like, shit, Travis, let's write a verse for you to be on. This is your beat. So that's how that song came to be in. But yeah, we wrote that verse right there in Hawaii. But there's a version with just me. That's crazy. A crazy ass version, just me. It's so raw. And then Kanye took my voice and distorted it. And he was like, we might be opening up. I was like, why don't you distort my voice of all the people in my song?
Hey, it kind of went hard.
He said something dope. Yeah, no, he said we might be opening up a chamber for Malik. You know what I'm saying? I might be a Malik Yusef spoken word chamber with distorted voice and shit. I'm like, yeah, that's possible. You know what I'm saying? Cool. I'm not really mad.
Man, bruh, hey, I we could keep going all day, man. But I feel like
I feel like
I already done took all the time. Chancey, I know you still with us. We've been talking all this entertainment stuff.
It's great. Hey, I'm really enjoying it.
Hey, brother, you know, just before we get you out of here, we just got to find out what you got going and how people can find you and follow you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, just my Bad Kids class starts tomorrow. Writing camp and production camp starts tomorrow. It's a year long virtual camp. It used to be I do it in person. And now it's just, I'm excited about it because we're going to be just writing songs for placement, writing songs. The artists can come in and you can curate your album. And
how does somebody become involved with that? Is it too late for kids to become involved in that?
No, it's a year long. You know, you get 1 year, you know, well, it's packages. You can do a 1 year package. You could do a one camp.
Right.
For I think it's $1 or something. Oh, wow. I don't know. And you get to participate in the ownership of the song. That's the key. Right. Get the ownership of the song. So if it gets to an album or if it gets to a movie or a soundtrack or a video game or a playlist, you monetize off of it for the rest of your, 76 years.
Right, right.
So, and perpetuity of the song. So yeah,
that's a great concept, man. That's really dope.
Thanks, G. I appreciate that. You know.
Yeah, well, that's cool.
So yeah, it's just badkidsclass.com. Class with a K. K-I-D-S, class with a K. Badkidsclass.com.
Okay, definitely go out there and check that out. And I was going to ask you, like, how does a kid, you know, get into that? There's so many kids that want that outlet. Like, and you know, I used to be an educator as well. And we started a hip hop club at the school, and we had reached out to you years ago for that, and you was gonna come through for that, so I'm always trying.
Why didn't I come through?
You know what? I think it was a timing thing. I think it was a lot going on, and that's when I started managing Lee. So I was hitting the road a lot. It just didn't. And then I stopped working at the high school. I left and went full time. So yeah. Mm-hmm. But they still there, bro. Like. I know that you are like, you're going to inspire kids as soon as you're around them, if you're in the same room or even on the Skype or Zoom.
I definitely get that vibe.
You know what I'm saying? I already knew that.
Especially if they the mall.
Yeah. You know we got them up here.
Yeah. I do know.
Yeah. Hey, but we're going to get you out of here, man. Chancey, is there anything you want to say before we get Malik out of here?
I was actually just going to ask what age for the kids, because I have high school kids. I would love to point that direction.
Oh. I had a 72-year-old guy sign up last night.
Oh, okay, awesome. Wow, that's cool. Wonderful.
Yeah, he said he been writing songs since he was a kid in Jersey. He got his girlfriend pregnant on prom, so he raised his kids.
Wow.
Went to school, became a some kind of doctor, raised his grandkids. Now he's in Florida, retired, and he got notebooks of songs. I'm like, shit, come on, bring him to bring the bad kids camp. Let's see if we can make hits. Wow. He got work ready.
Nice.
So, you know, I think the youngest kid I got in there is 13. I might have somebody younger, but I think 13 is the youngest person. But it's any age, you know what I'm saying?
I know where to send them.
Because we write.
Mm, I know where to send them. I know where to send them. All right, Dev, before we get out of here, you want to say anything?
Appreciate you, man. I'm scratching it off my bucket list, man.
Oh, man.
Real, man.
Bless you.
Hey, Malik Youssef, one and only, the Wordsmith, the inspiration, guy from Chi City. Keeps it real and very talented, man. Let's not overlook the talent.
Oh, yeah.
Man, I'm blessed. I'm so blessed.
And you bless us all the time. And one of the humble dudes, you and I both know we come across a lot of entertainers that act like assholes just because they done did something that we all like. And it's so unnecessary.
Well, that's who they are. You understand? That's who they are. And it just amplifies because they get famous. They've been that. They would have been that at McDonald's, nigga. They would have been the person like, I can't stand this motherfucker.
Did y'all hear that? If you are who you are everywhere you go. Mm-hmm. All right, with that, we're going to get you out of here. Have a blessed rest of the day. For Chansey and for Dev and Asia, we appreciate you. And I'll see you, bro. We'll be in touch. Hey, and you got to send your people through my way. I'll send you the information so y'all can come through and get some of that smoke.
Please, by all means.
My man. Talk to you soon. Peace and love.
Bless. Live long and prosper.